We're on a mission from God.
And now for something completely different.
Pastor Jolly John McCumsky from St. Paul's Lutheran Church in New Athens, Illinois, and Trinity Lutheran Church in Darmstadt. And to my right, I have
Pastor Matt Youngblood Clark from Emmanuel Lutheran in Waterloo, Illinois.
And this is Wrestling with the Basics.
Are we supposed to say that together?
That's okay. We got to still work on the opening. We got some bugs we're working on here. Yes, we are glad to be with you again. I would like to start a new series today, if we could, Matt.
Sure.
Again, in order for it to be a series, we have to do it more than once. So I understand that series, question mark. But I thought it would be fun if we would do a series entitled Reasons Why the Mayans Should Have Been Correct.
All right. Good. So, yeah.
Okay. Because we all know, the world didn't come to an end last, December, was it?
December 20-something.
20-something, yeah. Yeah, we've forgotten already the date. But every once in a while, I run into some things, and I'm thinking, yeah, maybe the Mayans had a point. So if listeners out there have experienced some of these things and want to email us and share it with us, all you got to do is go on www.kfuo.org. Look for the Wrestling with the Basics page on KFUO, and I'm sure there's some place where you can click and get our email addresses and contact us. But here was the thing I experienced this last week that made me think maybe the Mayans should have been right. Have you seen the dancing underwear cards at Target?
I have not seen the dancing underwear cards.
Run down as soon as we get here and go to your local Target and go to the card shop because, yes, they have cards with dancing underwear on them, Matt.
Oh, great. What says I love you like dancing underwear?
And the fact that it's at Target, I mean, I suppose there were probably always stores that had dancing underwear, but to see it right there in Target with all of the other cards for Valentine's Day and all of that stuff, but yes. So ask for them by name. Tell them that you heard about it on Wrestling with the Basics, the dancing. And they got birthday cards. I don't know if they had any get well cards. I should have checked, but maybe they had those too.
Sympathy cards.
Yeah, probably not. Probably no. But they probably did have some get well cards. So,
How does it dance? Is it like a hologram? Or
It's got a tiny gas engine in it, I'm assuming. I'm not sure how it's powered. You touch them and the underwear dances on the outside. It actually vibrates, moves up and down, wiggles back and forth, whatever comprises an actual dance, and right there on the cover of your card.
It's a good use of technology.
I think so. No wonder we're losing to China. See, they used to make the dancing underwear cards, and now this is what we do in the United States. Okay, well, enough of that. Oh, wait.
That's a perfect soundbite.
I know, I'm handling the sound effects here. Where are they at?
Here we go.
All right, now, there's no time for foolishness.
Okay, that's right. Matt, yes, and this isn't foolish either, so I'm sorry I actually begin with dancing underwear, because it's probably not appropriate at all to the story of Job. Wow, this is a terrible story about God afflicting him, taking away all his possessions, and then afflicting him bodily, and the one thing he has left in life, his beloved wife saying to him, why don't you just curse God and die?
I know it.
Talk about adding insult to injury.
Oh, boy. And it's not God afflicting the guy, though, ultimately. It's an important point, nuance, that God's allowing him to be afflicted through Satan here. And Satan's ultimately the one that's causing the pain and the heartache and the temptation here, too. And I think that's in our lives as well. Because we live in this sinful, fallen world, ultimately it's Satan's the one behind all
this. Yes, that's what I've been saying.
Yeah, and I don't mean that in humor, but I think you're right. We've got to clarify that. No, God does not do evil to people. He's incapable of doing evil. He is a God of love. Of course, you know, I'm sure people saying, well, yeah, that's a really nice thought, Pastor John and Pastor Matt, but God's still allowing Satan to do this evil, and that's the greater issue. But I do think that's an important point to make. No, God in himself would never, ever do this.
Yeah.
It always comes from Satan. Every evil in the world comes from the devil, or from the world itself, which is corrupted by sin, or from our own sinful flesh, yeah, but none of it ever comes from God. But help us puzzle with this, though, because God did allow Satan to do all these things.
Yeah. Yeah, and while we're clarifying things, last week I talked about our little our Bible study series at Emmanuel over in Waterloo, where I'm at, and I guess I had a slip of the tongue. I said we're reading through 24 verses a week. That wouldn't get us very far to the Old Testament.
Yeah, well, I was saying 24 verses. That's just chapter one of Genesis.
I'd be 60 years old like you before we got through all that.
What did you mean? You didn't mean 24 verses.
24 chapters.
Okay.
So good. Right. Thanks for the clarification.
That makes more sense.
So if, anyway, so we what we recently studied was Job. And last week, like you pointed out, we talked about how he's suffering, God allowing Satan to cause this suffering in Job's family. His family's killed, his sons and daughters at least, loses just about all his property. And now if that's not enough, Satan's allowed to even now inflict pain upon Job physically. He has these sores that he scrapes with pottery. It's terrible. And then in Job chapter 2, verse 9... we hear about his wife's great advice to just curse God and die, which, by the way, is being sarcastic. That's terrible advice. But she seems to both reject God, it seems here, ready to curse the Lord for crying out loud.
Also
her husband, she's not holding fast to
him. Could I add a hopeful thought, though?
Yeah, please do. We need one.
Well, no, just the fact that the text begins with Job praying for his children.
Mm-hmm.
And that becomes very poignant when you realize then the children die.
Yeah.
And I think, wow, what a good thing you did that. So there's that little element of hope that's in there. Now, the wife, of course, that's a little disturbing. But there is a hope for the children, at least, that Job had prayed and asked God. And so if they did die, well, they're still in heaven. You know, there will be a reunion with them. Well, anyway, I just thought that was neat, and a good reason why we should be praying for our kids all the time.
That is neat,
too.
Yeah, chapter one goes out of its way, it seems, to say, to talk about how Job prayed for, even gave sacrifices on behalf of his children.
Yep,
he cared about them as a good dad, a good father. That's a great insight and a good model for us, too.
And a reminder that, that's it. The things we love and care for here, we really ought to pray to and turn over to God, because we don't know how long we're going to have any of these things here. But anyway, that's not the story. Continue.
All right. So let's pick up with chapter 2, verse 10.
Okay.
This is Job's response to his wife's advice to curse God and die. Here's what he says.
But he said to her, "You speak as one of the foolish women would speak. Shall we receive good from God, and shall we not receive evil?" In all this, Job did not sin with his lips.
Okay. So, we're pretty quick to receive good from God, it seems like.
I'm all for that.
Yeah, I'm all for that. Bring it on, God. And sometimes maybe we
test me a little. Put me to the test.
Yeah, and maybe we think we even deserve it.
Well,
I think good enough. God, come on, bring it on. Bring on the blessings. But then we're pretty slow to accept bad. When things go bad, it doesn't take long, myself included, to start wondering, okay, God, what's the deal? Why is this happening?
Oh, yes,
So Job's response is just the opposite. Why do we accept good but not evil or bad from the Lord? So in this, I mean, he trusts in the Lord. You know, and that's not to be, you know, we need to avoid fatalism, just thinking that, oh, well, it's pointless, there's no hope in this, or no future. We still pray to the Lord, and we see Job worshiping here too. But yet, hopefully, what Job is expressing here is a trust in the Lord in both good times and bad.
And I really, that's a good point, Matt, because I'm sitting here thinking, is this different than the deterministic philosophy that says, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we may die?
Yeah.
But no, you're right. That's not what he's saying. He's not saying, sometimes we get good, sometimes we get bad. But I think you're right. He's expressing that same trust in the Lord, regardless of whether it's good or bad. We can still trust in the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with you.
Yeah. All right. Well, here, the next thing that happens is his friends show up. And his friends try to be a help to Job.
Yeah, with friends like these, who needs enemies?
Yeah, that's the thing. So verses 11 through, let's see, if you want to read 11 through 13,
sure.
It talks about Job's friends.
Now when Job's three friends heard of all this evil that had come upon him, they came each from his own place, Eliphaz the Temanite, Bildad the Shuhite, and Zophar the Naamathite. They made an appointment together to come to show him sympathy and comfort him. So this is good. And when they saw him from a distance, they did not recognize him. Wow. And they raised their voices and wept, and they tore their robes and sprinkled dust on their heads toward heaven. And they sat with him on the ground 7 days and seven nights, and no one spoke a word to him, for they saw that his suffering was very great.
Yeah. So things are that bad that they don't even recognize the guy.
Wow.
That disfigured. The suffering, the sores are that great.
And yet this is a reality. If you've ever seen anybody that's been ravaged by cancer or anything like that, you see him in the hospital, and you're right. At first, is this the same person that I used to know?
Yeah, you bet. It happens.
Very
it
striking.
Happens. You bet. And their response at first, what do?
They're just with him.
They're just with him. How long? For 7 days and seven nights. They said nothing but just sat on the ground with him.
Yeah.
Because they saw that his suffering was very great. And to be honest, this is probably the best thing that these friends do for him. They just keep their mouths shut, and they're just there for Job.
Holy cow.
So, because the lion's share then of the book of Job is Job having a conversation with these friends. And the thing is, the friends don't really give advice at all. It's all that great.
Yeah.
I mean, they're there and they're trying to explain suffering. They're trying to explain why this is happening to Job. And their answer to suffering seems to be the same as Satan's, really, that God blesses those who are good and God curses those who are bad.
Yeah.
If you're good enough, God's going to shower blessings. If you're a bad person, God's going to curse you. Simple as that. But what's the problem with that reasoning?
Well, it's wrong. For one thing, it's a lie.
Yeah.
But one of the devil's most popular lies.
You bet.
Yeah.
And then it causes doubt. Okay, well, something bad happened in my life. I do not believe hard enough. Has God forsaken me?
That believe hard enough thing. Oh, that's easy to fall into.
You bet it is.
I just need a little more faith. That's
the
problem.
You bet it is. And when you think about a guy like Job, who seems to be a faithful guy, or you think about a guy like the Apostle Paul, who was a faithful guy, certainly, but yet had this thorn in his flesh, and God's response isn't, you've got that affliction because, you know, you haven't been that good of a person. No, his response is, my grace is sufficient for you.
Yeah.
So here with Job, for the chapters that remain, basically, he and his friends are struggling with why this is happening to him. Why this is taking place.
And if I could just put in a quick word.
Please.
You know, that is the problem, and as a fellow pastor, because we feel like we've got to do that. Like, we've got to give people answers. And I think you're right. Maybe sometimes the best thing we could do, especially at this point where it's just they're overwhelmed in grief and sorrow, is just to be with them.
Yeah.
And in that way show that the Lord. Now, I'm not saying there aren't things that could be said, but you're certainly right. What they said isn't helping the issue. And how often do we fall into that when we try to answer the question why? So what was it that you did that's causing this to happen?
And it happens because we live in a sinful, fallen world. It's not necessarily this one thing we did bad that God's zapping us. And I love what you said. It's just that ministry of presence sometimes is what it's called, when you're just present with the person. You're there with them. You're just present with them, holding their hand, maybe just in the same room with them as they go through this difficult time in their life. That's a powerful thing. And I think sometimes as Christians, we underestimate that. And I think, especially as pastors,
we underestimate
and think we always have to have the exact right thing to say at the right time. But just to be there is important.
But it is funny, because that is that temptation that we want to be able to solve the question why. And a lot of times I don't know that there is a immediate answer to that. But there are other good answers, which apparently we're going to discover here.
Yeah, because that's the underlying thing here is why is this happening? Why is the suffering taking place? And like I talked about last week, you know, I don't think maybe that's not the right question to even ask here in the book of Job. Because really the only person who seems to be given an answer to why suffering takes place is Satan. And his answer is basically the same as the friends.
Yeah.
That God blesses those who do good and curses those who do bad. And God, the only reason Job cares about you, Lord, is because you've blessed him.
But, you know, see, that's an interesting thing, because this story basically destroys that very common thought, because we know by definition Job is not a bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
He's a good guy, and he's remained faithful despite these trials, and yet more trials come.
Yeah.
So if that's the principle, that we're suffering because of some specific thing we did, well, then this story doesn't fit at all. It doesn't fit that pattern at all.
Yeah.
Okay, got me thinking, Matt.
Good,
that's
good.
Fine.
Well, and as we read through Job, then, I think for our listeners, as you read through Job, realize that what the friends are saying here isn't all good. They make some good points, but they're not right, okay? Really, you see some glimpses in this conversation of good stuff, but ultimately it's God in the end who gives the final reason for why this is taking place. He gives an answer to Job.
And do we have that? Are we going to do it? Do we need to go get some place first?
Let me summarize here. Job endures. Okay, endures the suffering. Okay, he doesn't curse God and die like his wife suggested. But throughout the book of Job, we see in a couple different places, I don't know if we can look all of them up, but that Job needs someone outside of himself.
All right.
Okay, perhaps the most famous one is Job 19, verse 23. So I'm going to turn to Job 19, verse 23.
You got me excited now.
Yeah, so there's a hymn that's pretty well known that's based on these verses, too. So,
okay.
But anyway, Job 19, verse 23.
Now, is this Job speaking here?
Yeah, this is Job speaking.
Okay.
And go ahead and skip down to verse 25, actually, 19, verse 25.
Okay. For I know that my Redeemer lives, and at the last he will stand upon the earth. And after my skin has been thus destroyed, yet in my flesh I shall see God, whom I shall see for myself, and my eyes shall behold and not another. My heart faints within me.
Yeah. So Job here is saying that he needs someone outside of himself. You see, he's going to get through this. He needs a redeemer, is the word he uses.
Uh-huh.
That hymn, I know my Redeemer lives, and we sing around Easter usually based on these verses. I know these verses usually said at the graveside even. But it's this recognition that in the midst of suffering and even in the midst of death, we need someone outside of ourselves too, just like Job did. We need that Redeemer. And of course, that Redeemer is Jesus Christ, our Savior.
And when we're asking the question why, we're actually just trying to turn it inward, aren't we? We're trying to look for some kind of answer within ourselves or something we've done. And that's just the wrong place to look.
Yeah. Well, you're right, because what the friends are saying here is that God blesses those who are good, zaps those who are bad.
Yeah.
Like you said, that brings the focus on ourselves. And what we do, we're calling the shots, really, and almost forcing God's hand. You know, my actions causes God to give me blessings or curses.
Yeah, so God is just, it is deterministic. Depending on what I do, then that'll make
God's going to react the way, depending on my actions.
Kind of like he's our puppet, and we can move him however we want by being good or bad.
Yeah,
oh,
that's
I like
it,
that thought.
That's what
it
comes down to.
Because that's kind of ridiculous when you put it that way.
Yeah. Well, and then the other thing is, God blesses those who do good, he curses those who do bad. Is that law or gospel?
Oh.
I mean, it's all law.
Yeah.
I mean, if they're trying to give Job hope here, there is no hope in that. That's all law. It's no gospel. But yet we have these glimpses of gospel in Job, I think, like this. I know my Redeemer lives. Boy, it's beautiful.
And you know, I'm thinking, Matt, if this is true, it really does change everything in perspective. Because first of all, as we said earlier, he didn't lose his kids. No, because the Redeemer lives and he'll see them in his flesh.
Yeah.
Right. And even though in his flesh now he is suffering with his terrible illness, really makes no difference because, again, that flesh is all going to be corrected, made into a glorious body, like his body, says in the letters of Paul.
Yeah.
Now, again, I'm really sensitive to this because I don't know that we can always process this in the midst of our trials and sufferings. But if it is true, it really does change our perspective entirely when we've lost things in this earth and even in our own present, as I experience now getting older, that you see the body just kind of decaying away. But this is basically saying, well, it really doesn't make any difference because everything's going to be taken care of. It's all going to be resurrected. It's going to be a whole new situation.
You bet.
None of this is permanent and lasting anyways.
Yeah, if Job never gives his animals back, his female donkeys and all the rest, if he never gets his children back, if he never gets his health back, this side of heaven, so what?
Yeah, exactly.
Ultimately, his Redeemer lives, and as he says here, even in his flesh he will see him. He has the hope of eternal life.
And yet my heart faints within me.
Yet it's not easy in this life when we go through suffering. That's not to belittle or say, well, if someone's suffering and they're in pain or complaining, well, just get over it. I mean, no. We got to recognize that, no, pain and suffering is very real here. It hurts. But ultimately we have hope.
You've got me laughing because there's just this horrible, horrible Broadway play. I do not recommend that you go see it, called The Book of Mormon. But honestly, this is the philosophy that is expressed in one of those songs. The song is Man Up. and it talks about Christ on the cross, and that's the thing. Man up, Jesus.
Saying that to Jesus.
But see, you've just hit, I thought, there's something wrong with that. And now I realized, that's not the teaching of Christianity. The teaching of Christianity is that this is a horrible world sometimes because not of God, but because of the devil, because of us, because of friends who come trying to be helpful and just make things worse. But the response to that is not man up. No, my heart faints within me. Yeah, this is how it is for Christians. It is how for the Lord, right? Father, take this cup away from me. No. But it is to know the truth. My Redeemer lives.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Bet.
It's still going to hurt when you have sores on your body, though.
Yeah, nobody likes discipline. That's what it says about. No one likes discipline, what's happening.
Yeah, but there's a future hope.
Yeah.
So anyway, okay, we need to get going so we can wrap this up.
We can do this another week, but I'm enjoying this. Go ahead. Where are we going from here? Don't feel rushed, man.
Okay. Well, let's, there's a couple other places where Job needs someone outside of him in the midst of suffering and pain. It talks about a mediator being needed. Again, pointing to Christ. An upright man in chapter 23, pointing to Jesus. But let's go ahead and skip all the way to the toward the end here, chapter 38.
Matt, I'm going to call an audible here, okay? Do you really want to jump to the end, or would you rather spend some time talking about the upright man?
Oh, well, we can. Yeah,
let's
we can spend
that.
Time. Okay.
We'll come and wrap it up next time, because this is good stuff.
All right, very good.
So what were you talking about now?
Well, let's go to chapter 9, verse 33.
Again, chapter 9, okay.
Here is this.
I like the theme that we need somebody outside of us.
Yeah. Okay. And that comes up again and again in Job. And it's not the friends who are giving the good advice, but it's Job himself here in conversation and in response to the friends and their bad advice.
The faith is kind of working itself out.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what verse do I need to read?
Okay, so chapter 9, verses 33 to 35.
Okay. For he is not a man?
It begins, there is 33, no arbiter.
I'm sorry. Yep. There is no arbiter between us who might lay his hand on us both. Let him take his rod away from me, and let not dread of him terrify me. Then I would speak without fear of him, for I am not so in myself. Now unpack those verses for me,
okay,
Matt.
Well, I think Job is mourning the fact that there is not an arbiter or mediator or go-between between him and God. He's saying the suffering's happening to me. You know, I know the Lord is there. I know he's with me even. But why is this taking place? I need someone, an arbiter, a mediator between me and God to help me out. I need someone outside of myself.
So this is an answer to what these guys are saying, what his friends are saying to him?
So this is Job's response to the usually bad advice that his friends are giving to him.
So now I just want to make sure I'm understanding this. So basically what Job is saying, you guys are telling me that I'm getting this because of something I've done.
Yeah.
I just need to search my soul and conscience. I really could use an arbiter to come here and point out to you that that's not so.
Yeah.
There's no particular evil wickedness if that's what you're looking for.
Yeah.
No. If I had an arbiter here, he could point that out to, because that's what arbiters do. They try to give both sides of the case. Yeah. So is that what's going on here?
I think an arbiter between Job and his friends here, but also an arbiter or mediator between Job and God here too. Between Job and, to set things right. You know, an arbiter or go-between, someone to set things right here. Because I think Job is confused too.
Yeah.
And he needs someone to set things right with God.
And I'm thinking that I can see that because if he truly is a Christian, despite the fact that he can truly say, well, I haven't done something horrible like committed adultery or murder or anything like that, I'm sure in his conscience he's got to be thinking, but I am a sinner.
Yeah.
I can't really say that I don't deserve all of this.
Yeah. And what does sin do? Separate us from God. So we need someone to bridge that separation. And in our own lives, well, the blessing that it is to have a mediator, a savior, who is a go-between between us and God, us and the Father, Jesus. We're not on our own. That separation isn't still there, but Jesus has overcome that separation, given us access to the Father.
Hi. Well, I'm excited to continue this and to learn.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I didn't want you to feel pressed because I think this is good stuff.
Oh, good. I'm enjoying it too. And next week, we will get to the conclusion. We will get to how do we deal with suffering, and is the answer to how to deal with suffering even the main point here? So, see you next week.